Members, I call this meeting of the Judiciary Committee to order. Looks like we have a quorum, barely. And today we're going to be hearing the Guardian Ad Litem budget presentation and one bill, HF 13, by Representative Kunesh Podein. HF 13 is the gender equality provided for under the law and constitutional amendment proposed. That bill has already been through a committee hearing. I believe Representative Barr has an amendment to that bill, and then ultimately we'll be re-referring the bill to the Committee on Ways and Means. But before we get to all of that, we need someone to approve the minutes for February 19th. Has anyone? Great. Thank you. Representative Liebling has moved the approval of the minutes for February 19th. Is there any discussion of those minutes? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes for February 19th, 2019 are approved. And now if we can go ahead and have the Guardian Ad Litem presentation, please step up and introduce yourself to the committee. Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you. My name is Kristen Treble-Helbersma, and I'm the program administrator for the Guardian Ad Litem Board. I'd like to thank you all for inviting me to provide a budget overview of the Guardian Ad Litem Board funding request for this next biennium. As many of you heard me discuss a few weeks ago, the Guardian Ad Litem Board was established in 2010 by Minnesota Statute 480.35. The duties and responsibilities of the board are to administer a statewide independent Guardian Ad Litem program to advocate for the best interests of children, minor parents, and incompetent adults in family and juvenile court. The board consists of 7 appointed members. The board has mandated and permissive duties. The mandated duties are to approve and recommend a budget to the legislature, establish procedures for funding distribution, establish guardian ad litem standards, policies, and procedures. The permissive duties are to propose statutory changes. The board has worked to define our purpose, and the purpose is that the guardian ad litem program exists so that all children with a court-appointed guardian ad litem have their primary needs met, and that each judicial officer is equipped to make informed decisions for each child within the confines of the available resources. Guardian ad litems are court-appointed child advocates who are mandated per federal and state law where allegations of abuse and or neglect are made. Guardians ad litem are appointed by judges, and guardians' responsibility is to advocate for the child's best interest for the duration of the court proceeding, and we accomplish that through 5 core statutory mandates. The guardian ad litem is the only independent voice representing the child's best interest during the court proceeding. In 1974, CAPTA was enacted, which is the Child Abuse Prevention and Treatment Act. The act provides federal foster care funds to the Department of Human Services. The act states that the state must enact and enforce laws mandating the appointment of a guardian ad litem on every juvenile court case alleging that the child has been abused or neglected. The Children's Bureau has contacted our program due to concerns regarding lack of compliance with this mandate. In 1975, the Minnesota Legislature enacted guardian ad litem statutes mandating the appointment of a guardian ad litem for every juvenile and family court case alleging that the child has been abused or neglected. There are currently approximately 500 children in our state that are not receiving a guardian ad litem due to our lack of ability to provide one given the increase in case filings over the last several years. In summary, it's clear that abused and neglected children need and desire best interest advocacy. Federal and state law require such. In a survey that was conducted by the Office of the Legislative Auditors last year, 91% of judges stated that they believe our program provides a unique service for children in the court system. 94% of judges reported that guardians ad litem, their performance at trial is good or very good. Last year, the Office of the Legislative Auditor provided a program evaluation, which has provided us with the roadmap for accountability and advocacy to improve accountability and advocacy for the children that we serve. At this point, we have done all that we can with the funds that we currently have. So now I'll talk about the budget. This slide shows you our fiscal year 18 and 19 budget overview, and as you can see, we have fairly low operating costs. 85% of our budget goes directly to personnel, with 15% to operations. The operational expenditures include rent, supplies, and travel. Our guardians see children monthly within their homes or where they're located, which accounts for significant travel expenditures throughout the state. In addition, guardians sometimes are assigned to multiple different court jurisdictions in different counties, and so they're traveling to multiple locations for court hearings and home visits, which accounts for a significant portion of our operational expenses. Over the past several years, efforts to minimize operational expenditures have occurred to ensure compliance with the mandates. Some of these changes have included closing down office locations throughout the state, streamlining services, and combining district management. We currently have 4 judicial districts that are combined under management. As you can see from this slide, we've had increased juvenile court filings over the last several years. The increases can be attributed to changes in the child welfare system as a result of the governor's task force on child protection, as well as increase in opioid and other drug cases throughout the state. Between fiscal year 15 to fiscal year 18, CHIPS cases increased by 50%. Permanency cases increased by 69%. 90% of our work as a program is in juvenile court.
Ms. Treble-Hauschma, could you please say those years again? The increase was between what years?
Fiscal year 14 to 18.
Thank you.
This slide shows you our FY 20 to 21 budget request. The Guardian Ad Litem Board has been requesting funds to cover our deficit as a result of increased case filings for the past several years. Given this continued deficit, the board determined that we would again request funds to allow for compliance with the mandates. Compliance with the mandates is the same request that we made to the legislature last year. In addition, the board concentrated the other areas of request on infrastructural gaps that prevent the program from providing quality services throughout the state. These requests are also a direct response to the recommendations from the Office of the Legislative Auditor and their program assessment last year. Our board is currently requesting $10.866 million, an increase of 32.42% to our current base budget. Our first change item is employee compensation. The Guardian Ad Litem Board needs to retain and attract skilled and knowledgeable employees who can ensure that competent and effective advocacy will be provided for the children that we serve. The Guardian Ad Litem Board is currently facing significant workforce challenges in accomplishing that goal. In 2018, we had a turnover rate of 17%. In addition, we are experiencing increased retirements as a result of the aging demographics in our society. Nearly 37% of current staff will be 65 years or older in the next 10 years. The Guardian Ad Litem Board will be losing a skilled workforce with an incredible knowledge base, and we will need to increase the compensation structure to be competitive in today's market. To ensure the salary structure supports a competent workforce, the board must strive to keep pace with county and public sector market. Exit interviews report staff are leaving our agency for better paying positions within county departments and nonprofit agencies. Minimizing this employee turnover will add consistency and reliability for the children that we serve. When an employee resigns from our program, it means that we must reassign all of the children on their caseload to different individuals. Oftentimes, the guardian ad litem is the only consistent person for that child throughout the court process. Making this transition can be very difficult for those children. So we're requesting a 3.5 compensation pool each year of the biennium, along with funding for the employer share of health care increases. The employer share of health care increases are set and determined by current Minnesota management and budget estimates. The Guardian Ad Litem Board does not negotiate its own insurance agreements. It participates in the general plan negotiated by MMB. We continue to have difficulty recruiting and retaining staff due to the current rate of pay. On a number of occasions, applicants have turned down opportunities for employment because we could not offer a pay rate that they would accept. Our second change item is compliance with federal and state mandates. So one of the Office of the Legislative Auditor's recommendations was that the Guardian Ad Litem Board develop a plan for complying with laws regarding GAL appointments. We're asking for funding to provide for 46 staff positions that will provide a guardian ad litem for all of the unassigned cases that we currently have. It will also assist in equalizing caseload levels for our staff. Many staff are at a caseload size that is far too high, and provide additional staff to address increased monitoring as a result of implementing the recommendations of the OLA. Again, this is the same amount of positions that we asked for last year. Our next change item is board development and training. The OLA also recommended that the guardian ad litem board provide for greater financial oversight, review of the program administrator's performance annually, as well as the establishment of measurable goals. The board has implemented all of these changes. In response to the recommendations, the board has been engaged in a board policy and governance realignment process and has implemented a structure referred to as policy governance. The board is now reviewing monitoring reports monthly, which provide data and information to enhance their government and policy development, which has also increased accountability and transparency for our board and our program. Board members are appointed for a two-year term. In order to ensure that this work continues, they need to be trained as they come on board. In addition, external auditing will be completed on an annual basis, which includes an annual cost that has not been previously required by our program. The last portion of this cost would be to provide for the development of our learning management system, which will track the data required for a number of the monitoring reports now required by the board as a result of the OLA. This will provide for more efficient utilization of resources and ensure compliance with the training requirements and the timelines. So our last change item is technology upgrades and enhancements. The Office of the Legislative Auditor has also recommended that guardian managers should evaluate the collection of evidence. To do so, the program needs to have the funding to provide for enhancements to our case management system. This would allow for dashboard visualizations. These include real-time monitoring of court report compliance, investigation status, case plan, child well-being monitoring, enhanced race and ethnicity data visualizations, as well as data visualizations on our public-facing website to ensure accountability and transparency. Our case management system enhancements include a dedicated workflow for court reports and investigation, interactive checklists to ensure compliance with statute rules and best practices. $50,000 would be utilized to deploy technology strategies to capture and securely store handwritten guardian ad litem notes and enhance document retention. So the results of the increased case filings are numerous. Some of them include the Department of Human Services could be impacted by the lack of compliance with CAPTA and the funds that they receive. Judges are rightfully concerned that they are not able to comply or were not able to comply with their court orders, and they're not getting the information they need to make child-focused decisions. Children of color are impacted due to the high levels of unassigned children in Hennepin County, furthering the effects of disparities on children. Our program has put all resources possible into providing direct services for the children that we serve. We have not been able to provide for the numerous program needs as a result of the increases, some of which are outlined in the OLA's report due to the funding. Most importantly, we have not been able to provide a voice for our most vulnerable population, which are the abused and neglected children in our state. So our funding request would serve to protect children and reduce re-entry of children into the child protection system, ensure children receive appropriate services including trauma-informed care, ensure physical and mental health, education, and cultural needs are met, ensure children are reunited with their parents when possible, and ensure the guardian ad litem board and program are accountable to the citizens of the state of Minnesota. The guardian ad litem board and program have undergone many changes in an effort to implement the recommendations from the OLA's report from last year. We have worked tirelessly to address the recommendations and to ensure the best possible advocacy for the children that we serve. The request that I have presented to you focuses on the most important aspects of our work and will allow the board to continue to improve the services we provide through redesign and realignment. We ask that you consider fully funding our request to ensure that children receive the advocacy that they need. And thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you so much. Any questions? Yep, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question. You had talked about the potential loss of captive funding. Can you enumerate about what that might be, how much the potential might be?
Go ahead, Ms. Treble-Halbersma.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. I met with some folks from the Department of Human Services last week, and I was able to gather some additional information. And it was reported to me that in FY17, the Department of Human Services received a little over $400,000, and it was increased to about 1.5 in FY18. The increased amount received in FY18 was specific to the development of programming related to substance-exposed infants, specifically plan of safe care compliance. What I have learned from them is that there are a number of different captive requirements that they need to be in compliance with, and essentially the required assurances exceed what Minnesota receives in captive funds, and therefore they do not provide funding to our agency as a result of CAPTA.
Representative O'Neill?
So they don't provide funding to because of CAPTA. So I guess I'm trying to understand, like, how much money have we already lost or will lose because we're not in compliance because you haven't been properly funded?
Go ahead. Madam Chair, Representative, we have not lost any funding to date. The next step would be if the Children's Bureau determines that Minnesota needs to develop a program improvement plan as a result of being out of compliance. At this point in time, I'm communicating with the Department of Human Services as well as the Children's Bureau regarding our lack of ability to meet the mandates and our hope to do so in the future with additional funding. So at this point in time, they have lost no funding, and the next step would be a PIP.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair. The Guardian Ad Litem program is a great program. In fact, and we understood the issues last year that we actually just remember it was close to 90% of what the OLA report was. So it's a good program. It needs to be taken care of. And unfortunately, with the governor's veto, it put us in a bigger mess.
Ms. Treble-Halbersma, any comment?
No, madam. Thank you.
Any other questions from members? Chair Constein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to reiterate what you and I have talked about professionalizing the guardian ad litem, do you have any plans or ideas about going forward with that?
Go ahead.
Madam Chairman, Representative, we are in the process of updating all of our training materials for our guardians. We did purchase a learning management system so that we can create learning modules for our training program. And so we are increasing all of our four core training programs for our staff. And with that, we believe it will assist us in professionalizing the role.
Chair Constein?
Oh, thank you.
Any other questions from members? All right. Seeing none, thank you very much for your presentation. We appreciate you coming in on this snowy day today, and that's true for all the testifiers that are coming today. We really appreciate you being here. I know the conditions aren't easy for everyone, so thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
All right, next, the bill we have for consideration is House File 13, Gender Equality Provided for Under the Law and Constitutional Amendment Proposed. I believe I saw Representative Mary Kunish-Podein come in. Here she is. And I move that Representative Kunish-Podein's bill, House File 13, be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All right. And we have the bill before us, so Representative Kunish-Podein, welcome to the committee, and please tell us about your bill.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair and members. I am very pleased today to present to you today House File 13. I'm State Representative Mary Kunish-Podein, and House File 13 proposes a constitutional amendment to add language to the Minnesota Bill of Rights. It specifically addresses Article 1, Section 18, and it will include to provide that equity under the law shall not be abridged or denied on account of gender. And what this bill would do would there would be a question that would be added to the ballot in the during the election 2020 and allow the voters to decide whether this amendment or this language would appear in our Minnesota Constitution.
All right. Thank you very much. And I believe you have some testifiers here in support of the bill. They can go ahead and get started.
Wonderful. Thank you. I would like to first ask Dr. Ellen Kennedy, who is a professor at Mitchell Hamlin School of Law and executive director of World Without Genocide, to speak.
Welcome, Dr. Kennedy. Thank you. Go ahead and introduce yourself, and you may begin.
I am Ellen Kennedy, Mitchell Hamlin School of Law and World Without Genocide. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you today. I want to begin with a question. Who do you go to the bathroom with? I taught in a college of business for 20 years. One of my wise female colleagues from another department asked me that question 20 years ago. I was the only woman in a faculty department of 10, and I had been the only woman for a very, very long time. What she meant was, who has your back? Who shares information with you? Who can you confide in? I always felt that I had to work longer, harder, and smarter to prove that I was at least equal to the men in the department. And so I did. I worked a lot. I got promoted, praised, and rewarded, but never quite as much as the men. I have now been a professor for more than 40 years. When I started working, women earned 72 cents to the dollar that men earned. Today it's 78 cents. In 40 years, I've earned 6 cents. I was asked to speak today about what the ERA would do for me. My answer is what the ERA will do for women. Without the ERA, the only right that women have in this country that makes them equal to a man is the right to vote. Without the ERA, we have no permanent guarantee of equality in any area, legal, economic, social, civil, or political. Any laws in our state that give women equal rights with men could be taken away by new state laws at a new time. The ERA for Minnesota would guarantee our equality permanently and constitutionally. The United States is one of only 6 countries on the planet that hasn't ratified the United Nations Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. The other countries, Iran, Palau, Tonga, Sudan, and Somalia. In this era of Time's Up and hashtag Me Too, it's perfectly clear that women are unequal to men in this country. We don't earn equally. We are harassed, threatened, assaulted, and raped. Title IX is imperiled, and women won't be treated fairly in sexual assault cases on campuses. More than 400,000 rape kits still remain untested in boxes around the country. Perpetrators have impunity for their crimes, because women simply don't matter. In the last 20 years, more than 250,000 child marriages have occurred in this country. 84% of those children are young girls who almost always are being married off to older men. Were it not for the cover of marriage, those men would face charges of statutory rape. We women are underrepresented on the bench, in the boardrooms, in the directors' chairs, and in Congress. We are underrepresented and often deliberately put in grave physical danger by male colleagues in professions like construction and mining. Let's bring it home. Recent research documents that location, the actual state where a woman is born and where she lives as an adult, matters for her work and for her pay. A woman's lifelong earnings and how much she works are influenced by the level of sexism in the very state where she was born and lives. 26 states in the United States have some form of Equal Rights Amendment in their constitutions. And as you have just heard, Minnesota does not. Yet we are one of the 37 states that passed the federal ERA bill that has still not yet been enacted. I want this bill, House File 13, to pass in Minnesota because I want Minnesotans to be able to choose to embed the ERA firmly in our state constitution so that state efforts to legislate equality cannot be removed in the future. Women's rights are human rights, and human rights are women's rights. It's time. I am equal. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kennedy. And I think what we'll do is go ahead and continue on with the testifiers in support of the bill. So if you could stick around for questions, we'll listen to the supporters, and then we'll have questions, and then we'll call those who oppose the bill and do the same.
Ms. Kennedy, I just wanted to, Madam Chair, and to the testifier, I just want quick, how many states did you say already have an Equal Rights Amendment?
26.
26. Okay, thank you.
Yes,
just wanted
26.
To make sure I got the number. Mm.
Great. Thank you so much. Go ahead, Representative Kunesh-Podein.
And I'm wondering if Rosemary Rocco is here?
She was not able to make it. I asked her to send her testimony. But Kristen...
All right. My testifier, Rosemary Rocco, has not been able to make it. Can I call another person to the stand?
You may, yes.
All right. I would like to call Representative Bonner here to testify.
Representative Bonner, welcome to the committee. Go ahead and state your name, please, for us.
Thank you. My name is Representative Bonner. I represent District 34B, Maple Grove and Osseo. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, Representative Kunesh-Podein, for allowing me to be here today. Rosemary Rocco, for those of you who do not know, who's actually a constituent of mine and actually played a good role on my campaign as well as my campaign chair. So I have a fairly good understanding of what she would have wanted to cover today. The Equal Rights Amendment is, I think, an issue of critical importance, and I think we've reached the precipice of a turning point in our history in which we've continued down this road. We fought long and hard for hundreds of years to get the right to vote. We fought long and hard to get the right to own property, to be able to open our own bank account, to have a credit card, to be not just considered the property of our male relatives, but as independent individuals with our own rights and liberties of our own. And it's been since 1919, that we actually won the right to vote. We have waited. We have waited. Women have patiently sat on the sidelines and waited for equality under the law. And the largest part of our American population believes that women already are guaranteed under the law equality. And the reality is they are not. We have built this very elaborate set of laws, such as the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, in order to try and ensure fairness and equality. We have Title IX. We have all kinds of pieces of legislation that we've stitched together to try and make that equality happen. But the reality is that they have no basis under the law in order to uphold them. And I want you to tell you today, members, that the most telling piece of this is that when asked, there was an interview with Supreme Court Justice Anton Scalia, and he expressly stated that while the law does not encourage sexual discrimination, when asked directly if our U.S. Constitution would prevent it, he said unequivocally, it does not. This is an issue that is long overdue. We've seen this continue to mount and mount with the beginning of 110 women on a very snowy day here at the Capitol, standing up for what they believe in with the Women's March, and that has continued through the organizations and people that have continued to surround this issue. I think it is time, members, to make this happen. We can mire down in all kinds of excuses on why it's not time, but the reality is women have waited long enough. I urge you, members, to pass this file, House File 13. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Appreciate your testimony today. And Representative Kunesh-Podein, if you have other testifiers.
No, I don't have any support anymore to speak in support at this time.
Yes, thank you so much. And we did point out at the beginning of the hearing that this bill has already been through another committee hearing before. So this is its second stop. Is that correct?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Okay, thanks. And this is its third. I'm seeing the sign of three being shown. So this.
Pardon me. It is the third stop.
Okay, thank you very much. So with that, I would like to open it up now for members to ask questions. Go ahead, Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the first testifier, Ms. Kennedy, I believe it is, if she'd come back up, I have a couple of questions. Thank you for being here this morning. How would you stated that you brought up the issue of the unused or the uninvestigated rape kits, and I want to know how passing this would take care of that problem in your mind.
Go ahead, Dr. Kennedy.
Thank you. Thank you, committee members. What we're looking at is the ability to shift our cultural norms, to say that women are important, to say that women matter. This is changing the culture, the entire way that the presence of women become validated in terms of every aspect of our existence, economic, civil, legal, and so on. So it may not address that issue from the outset, but what it does is it presents kind of a shift in what perhaps we can call more broadly customary law that will say women are indeed equal. We must begin to acknowledge the issues that are as critically important for women as for men.
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so one of the things you talked about was human rights, and the folks on this side of the aisle, at least in this committee, believe that an unborn child has a right to life as well. And since Roe v. Wade in the state of Minnesota, over 600,000 babies have been aborted. And if statistics bear out, probably half of those would be female. They would be women. And so how would this help the unborn females have access to human rights that you're speaking of?
Dr. Kennedy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What we're looking at is this broad perspective that women's rights will become equal rights. You're putting me in a very difficult position to try to address an issue that unfortunately becomes increasingly partisan. And what we are advocating for is an issue that says that women's rights on the broad stage of humanity, women's rights are equal rights. The ERA does not in and of itself deny or support the specific issue that you are raising.
Madam Chair, thank you. Well, all over the country where ERA has been passed, it has been used to actually increase the number of abortions. And so I would ask the bill's author, is that your intent with this bill, is to increase the number of abortions?
Representative.
Madam Chair, Representative, absolutely not.
And Madam Chair?
Go ahead.
And then would the author be open to an amendment, this abortion-neutral language that has gone on other places around the country to the ERA amendment? Would that be something that you'd be amenable to?
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I would not support an amendment like that. Minnesota Constitution already has protections in the Constitution, and so adding anything like that would not make it a valid amendment.
Madam Chair, I disagree. It's happened in other states where it has worked and it's been valid. I'm really disappointed because, I'm all for equal rights for women. And I think that you would probably get broader support on this ERA issue if that piece went on as an amendment. But I won't support anything that's going to increase the number of abortions. I just won't do it. So I appreciate you bringing this bill, and but that's where I stand. Thank you, members.
Dr. Kennedy, did you have a comment on that?
Yes, I would just like to remind the committee, thank you, Madam Chair, that the state did support the federal ERA bill. So let me leave it at that.
Thank you. And I just had a sort of a follow-up question to your testimony earlier. You said the United States was one of only six countries, I believe it was, that
yes.
hasn't passed. Can you?
The United Nations Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. The other countries are Sudan, Iran, Somalia, Palau, and Tonga, which are two tiny South Pacific island nations, and number six is the United States. Relative to the issue that is being raised, the State Department determined a number of years ago that that United Nations Convention is indeed abortion neutral. So this issue of the question of abortion has been determined by our State Department as being a non-issue for that UN convention. That convention is known as the Women's Declaration of Human Rights. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Kennedy. I see Ms. Murphy from the audience. Would you like?
I'd like to address the comments.
Please step forward. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record.
Excuse me, I have a little bit of a scratchy throat today. I'm Kathleen Murphy. I'm Vice President of ERA Minnesota. And I just want to address Representative Scott's concerns. It's my understanding that the premise of the language of the amendment that is considered to be offered stems from a state Supreme Court, I believe it was either from Pennsylvania or Connecticut from 1981, and then possibly another case in 1998 that referred to their state ERA to further support the use of public funding of abortions. And I believe it's also in Ms. Rao's written testimony. But the state of Minnesota already has a Supreme Court ruling on this issue from 1995. So to say that this addition to our Constitution would do anything to expand existing law in the way that they suggest is kind of a moot point. The Supreme Court in Minnesota, in the decision of Doe versus Gomez, already issued a constitutional ruling that the state cannot discriminate against a legal service when offering subsidies to subsidize care to pregnancy-related services for low-income women. So this concern would not actually expand any access to abortion that Minnesota doesn't already have. So I'd also like to point out that other states that have ERA clauses have not unduly restricted abortion-related laws from being adopted and taking effect. Women's equality necessarily requires reproductive and bodily autonomy, and without control over our own bodies and our life's choices, women cannot participate as full and equal citizens in this country or in this state. Thank you.
And
since that was directed, you may have a response.
Go ahead.
I appreciate that. Well, to the testifier, thank you for being here. Case law can change. Case law can change. And, you know, with any given different makeup of the court's case law can certainly change, and depending on the type of case that's brought as well. So I just wanted to respond with those words. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Scott. And I would just note, too, that courts are very careful to follow precedent, and they don't take changes in case law lightly, especially when we're talking about changes to our interpretation of the Constitution. I believe Representative Baer, did you have a, or Barr, did you have a comment?
I have a question.
Oh, go ahead.
Madam Chair, to Representative Cornish-Pudin, I have a my question centers around you use the word gender in your amendment, and everything you have had, all your testifiers are testifying in favor of women's rights. Now, last year, we had one of our members who's no longer here testifying on the, actually was on the floor and said there are 73 different genders. The Department of Motor Vehicles has us down as gender fluid. So why, my question is, why did you choose to use the word gender as opposed to sex?
Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think you explained that in this day and age, I think the word gender and sex can be used intermixed. Not everybody identifies traditionally as we have in the past as a male or female, and there are many different identifications, and we want to be inclusive of all folks because the ERA doesn't just provide protection for women or females. It protects, it provides protections for men and whatever gender you identify yourself as. And so we use this word to be as inclusive of our population as we can.
Representative Barr.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Could I offer the A-19 amendment, please?
I think we're going to
later?
Go ahead and do more questions.
Okay.
Yep, and we'll hear from opponents, and then we'll do that, the
thank
amendment.
You.
All right. Well, I'm hearing that perhaps we should do the amendment now. So if you want to go ahead and offer
we'll
your amendment.
Just go ahead and get that out of the way.
Yeah,
all right, thank
let's
you.
Do it.
So with respect to everybody being inclusive here, I'd like to offer the A-19 amendment, which would add also political orientation in inclusive to gender orientation. And the reason I wanted to add that is with the laws we passed last year and changed the way we're doing voting, we have to now identify, everybody who votes in a primary election now has to identify party affiliation, and that's public information. So, as an example, if you go down to Le Sueur and you go into the Cambria lobby in Le Sueur, there's a huge sign up there that says, "Welcome to Trump Country." So now do you want the owner of Cambria to go and start using that and identify, go back through public data and identify how many of his employees disagree with him and start making life difficult for them? And there's a lot of ways to do that that would still be within the law. Or vice versa, do you want to use the exact opposite where we can use, we can weaponize, basically weaponize political affiliation with, through all kinds of different job opportunities, media, just the people that we associate with on a daily basis. Now, we expect that in this job here to be called out on party affiliation, but if I'm going, if I'm a 9-to-5er, just a blue-collar guy going to work every day, a blue-collar person, I guess, going to work every day, I surely would not want my boss to know what I do in the ballot box. So that's why I brought this this amendment forward to also include persecution based on political affiliation.
Thank you, Representative Barr. And I have a question for you. Are there any other states, to your knowledge, that have a similar constitutional amendment?
Madam Chair, not to my knowledge.
And one more question for you, Representative Barr. Are there... How many years has something like this been in the process? It sounds to me like you've come up with this idea based on a law that was changed just last year. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, yes. Prior to last year's change, Minnesota's primary, you did not have to declare and record your political affiliation. You just picked up a ballot. You asked at the polling place which ballot you wanted and voted and put it in the box. And now you have to that will be a recorded starting in the 2020 election, whether you request a Democrat, Republican, or one of the other parties that's recognized in Minnesota, you will have to declare when you get the ballot, and it will be recorded for public consumption.
Thank you, Representative Barr. Are there any other comments or discussions on his motion? All right. Seeing none. All those in favor of the A-19 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail, and the A-19 amendment is not adopted. Okay. Let's go back then to questions that we had for our previous testifiers. I see you on the list. Hold on. There's some other folks. Representative Russell. Chair Liebling, I believe, did you have a question for our testifiers?
Well, Madam Chair, I just really wanted to respond on, of course, nothing gets us talking like the issue of abortion. It's such a controversial and divisive issue. But I just wanted to make just a quick comment to some that were made. And one thing, I just wanted to say that, to my knowledge, nobody wants to increase the number of abortions. Those of us who are pro-choice because we believe that women should make their own decisions in consultation with their own family members in the context of their own situations. That's why we're pro-choice. We're not pro-choice because we think abortions are great or we want to increase them. So I just want to make that clear because I think that was a bit behind the question. In fact, I think the question was, do you want an increase in abortions? And I, not to put words in Representative Kunesh Padin's mouth, but, you know, from what I know of her, I would guess she would say no. And she did say no. Of course she said no. The other thing is that I just wanted to comment, too, that, you know, if when people say they won't do anything that would increase the number of abortions, I mean, we understand that abortions happen for a number of reasons. And I'm just would say that I would be glad to have partnership among all the members for a lot of the things that we know will help to discourage abortions, like good health care, like economic opportunity, like, you know, having a clean environment so that there's a better chance that fetuses are not damaged. You know, I have someone very close to me who had a late-term abortion because her very much wanted child had a condition incompatible with life, basically. And, you know, these things happen for lots of different reasons. Some of them we can impact and some of them we can't. But I think that we can find a lot of common ground around doing things that, you know, allow women to have opportunities so that they feel less need to have abortion. Increasing access to contraception, of course, is one of those. So I just wanted to make that comment. I know it's a bit off topic here, but we are talking about the ERA. We are talking about what to many of us is women's opportunity to have their own autonomy, to be able to make their own decisions in the context of their own lives. Mm-hmm. So sorry if I'm a bit off topic there, but I just wanted to say that as we got into this topic of abortion, which I guess unfortunately has to be kind of related to the bill before us. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. And I think we're going to move on to questions from Representative Lucero. You're up next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And following up on the line of questioning from Representative Scott and to the point that was made by the testifier, that, or there was a testifier that was up here responding to state dollars and the funding, public dollars used to fund abortion. Well, we continue to see in recent headlines in the last just few weeks on some states passing new laws to guarantee third-term abortions all the way to seconds or minutes before an abortion. We see some states speaking about post-birth. And, in fact, the governor was mentioning that of a state. And so I think this is very relevant. And, in fact, it's not, and I completely agree that with, or I should say believe the bill author when she states it's not her intent, but it is the intent of other groups out there that will utilize something like this as precedent has been set in other states. And specifically, in the state of Pennsylvania, which Representative Scott mentioned, and this is from the letter distributed by Ms. Rowell from MCCL, quote, "Its central claims are that the abortion coverage ban violates the Equal Rights Amendment and equal protection provisions of the Pennsylvania Constitution." That is the quote from groups seeking to utilize this to expand abortion. And, Madam Chair, we have a number of testifiers who were signed up to testify who were not able to make it due to the unfortunate weather. So I just want to reference another letter here from the Minnesota Family Council that says, or it cites a Supreme Court ruling from 1996, United States v. Virginia, and the quote is, "Neither federal nor state government acts compatibility with the equal protection principle when a law or official denies to women, simply because they are women, full citizenship, stature, equal opportunity to aspire, achieve, participate in, and contribute to society based on their individual talents and capacities." This language has been tested in court and upheld countless times, as the ultimate legal protection for all persons residing in Minnesota. And then, as members will see, I had distributed, there were four letters from four different testifiers who, again, were going to be here, so I encourage you to take a look at that in their testimony against this bill. Question for the bill author. Is gender defined anywhere in state statute that you're aware of?
Representative.
You know, I do not know that answer. I asked that question. Somebody asked me that question yesterday, and I haven't found it. And so I can't tell you if that is the case or not.
Representative Lucero.
I would ask that question to research if they know if gender is defined.
Ms. Bullen.
Chair and members, as I don't know of a definition. There may be one in some area of statute, but the Minnesota Human Rights Act does not use the term gender as a defined term, so I don't know that there is one. There is a term gender identity that's sort of used as a protected class in the Human Rights Act, but the term gender, as far as I know, I don't know of a definition.
Representative Lucero.
The same question would be to the definition of sex. Does that exist in current statute?
Ms. Mullen.
Chair and members, the definition of sex is a term that's used in statute. It's in the Human Rights Act and in other statutes as well. What's that?
How's it defined?
Okay,
well, she's looking that up. Did you have another question?
I do. Thank you, Minister. Okay. And so while that's being looked up, I guess the question becomes, if gender isn't defined, do you not believe it's important to define that? So the Minnesota citizens, when voting on this, would potentially have a better idea of what it actually is that they're voting for.
Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe we should work on a definition, but my working definition for gender is, to me, gender is a reflection of who you see yourself as, whether it's male, female, trans, whatever it is, that's who you are. And if that's how you identify yourself as your gender, then who am I to say that is incorrect or not?
Representative Lucero.
Well, words mean things. Mm-hmm. Statutes mean things, obviously. And so in order to remove ambiguity, we should be clear in what the definitions of words are. And if there isn't a statute, and that might be your definition, but that might not be the definition of voters. So I think it's incumbent upon us, and you as the bill author, if we're going to move forward with this, to define the terms as they are used, as the language that you're using. So, Madam Chair, I would encourage, I just see a lot of problems with this, as with the abortion, as it is being used in other states to expand abortion. And because of the ambiguity, I would encourage members to vote against this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lucero. And I would just note also that there are a lot of terms that are used in our statutes that we don't specifically define, that are used by their common definitions. The Supreme Court frequently goes to dictionaries. I've had that happen in numerous cases of mine where they look up dictionary definitions because we don't simply define every single word that we have in our statutes. So, with that, I believe Representative Herr has a question.
Yes, and I don't think the mics are working, so doing this is probably not going to help.
Okay.
I don't have an answer to that particular question, because I have something else, but that triggered the fact that when I went to Brazil, they defined black as like 100 different shades of black. So there are just some words that will always have ambiguity, whether we want to create something concrete to define it. And so I don't even think that that's a possibility to not create it by us defining it. Doesn't mean that ambiguity doesn't exist around certain words. And so I just wanted to put that out there. The reason why I wanted to ask a question was that I really appreciate that the ERA and Representative Kunish Pudin, that you're bringing this forward. I really appreciate that robust conversation that Representative Scott has put forward around this. I feel like maybe this is a larger discussion that we have to have at another place, because this is a really complex situation, and that I feel like when we talk about women's rights, and now we're talking about the rights of unborn children, that we're asking people to have a false sense of choice, right? We're saying, well, if you choose women that are alive, you're not choosing women that aren't born. To me, that's a false sense of choice, and they shouldn't be even put into the same conversation. It's like when an African American is talking about the rights and the systemic oppression they face, It's as if we're always asking people to have a race to the bottom, right? And then we want Asian people to say, but what about us? We're oppressed, but our oppression looks different. And then we say, what about indigenous people? They're, and so we almost make people fight for this limited thing in which we give them this false sense of, like, if you choose this, you're not choosing people, which is why I choose Black Lives Matter, because I know that that house is on fire, not mine, even though I have issues I'm dealing with. And so to ask me to have to choose in certain things, I think, gives us a really wrong choice, a false choice of what it is that we should be doing right here. And what we have in front of us is an issue that impacts women who do not have equal rights. They exist right now, and the issue is pressing, and it's in front of us, and it's telling us that something needs to be done about this right now. And when we bring in other things that we think could potentially happen, we confuse the issue of that our system is built on a system in which has had centuries of systems of oppression built in against women and people of color and people who are poor, and that for us now to say, well, let's bring these other things in, which are very legitimate concerns, and I'm not saying it's not legitimate at all, but what I'm saying is that that's probably not the right conversation to be having today, and that if we care that much, then we should look at all the different systems in which create a fact that somebody may have to consider an abortion. And that's not a conversation potentially for today, that I think that this bill is really important as its own to stand up. And if we all decide that we're standing on the side of justice, that we remember that if we want to change something, we can't operate and band-aid what's going on now. We have to dismantle the systems of oppression that exist right now that was created so that one specific group of people always get to benefit. And we know what that group of people is right now. And so this issue is in front of us. This is the issue that we should be voting on. And this is what we have to do in order to dismantle systems and rebuild them. And so if we're on the side of justice, we should remember what we're either choosing to uphold in the systems that oppress certain groups of people, or what it is that we're choosing to dismantle so we can rebuild this. And so I didn't have as much of a question, but more of just that I feel really passionate about this and I needed to say something. So
thank you, Representative Herr. Chair Considine. Go ahead, follow that up, Chair.
Yeah, thanks. I know that in committee we don't address germaneness, but on the House floor we do. Let's look at the language. Shall the Minnesota Constitution be amended to provide that equality under the law must not be abridged or denied on account of gender? That's all it says. It is really pretty straightforward. There are none of these other issues of politics and things included in here. So arguments of what may or may not happen, frankly, are not germane. I did want to bring up that it wasn't really the Dark Ages. It was the 1970s. My mother was an ardent supporter of the ERA, and we're given her a hard time. And why is this, Mom? You want to do this? What is it? You know, you have a pretty good life. What is it that you're not able to do? And at that time, my father was stationed in Georgia. My mother was a teacher. And she looked at me and said, do you realize that when I come home, your father can take the paycheck out of my hand and go cash it? Now, he would have never dared do that. I was just floored that he had the legal right to take my mother's paycheck, go cash it, and keep it. And that's the kind of thing that we're trying to stop. That they have the same equal protection. And so I'm very much in favor of this. My mother passed away a couple of years ago, and to the very end was disappointed that Minnesota had not passed the ERA on the state level. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And I would just say, not too long ago myself, I was taking my children into a doctor's appointment, and I was the insurance carrier for our family, and the medical provider insisted that I put their father first because it was the male of the household instead of me, who was the carrier of the insurance program. So it's still happening, not even in that so distant of the past. Let's see, Representative Grossel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Considine, while this may sound pretty nice and straightforward, this is not just about male and female, and heads us down a slippery slope when determining how to define gender. So my question, I have a question for Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Go ahead.
Okay. Representative, why select the word gender and not just sex? to just not discriminate based on sex, like the proposed federal ERA.
Go ahead, Representative. I think we've had this question before.
Well, I guess I don't understand why folks are getting all bent out of shape on a word, sex or gender. I think we, just as Chair Mahler explained, there are words that we implicitly understand. And I don't know what, when you hear that word gender, if it confuses you with the word sex. But gender, again, in this day and age, I kind of think it's like we're bringing everybody up to date on the current verbiage, the inclusive verbiage around folks who identify in so many different ways. Not everybody identifies by through sex, and I think historically sex meant either male or female. Well, in this day and age, and you know, there are many people that identify in different ways. And rather than be exclusive or inclusive, we're trying to be inclusive of everyone in this. You know, I think we've said time and time again that this is not just something to support women or give women equal rights, but it also has equal rights around men as well, and any of those folks that identify in different ways. And so the use of the word gender is the contemporary word for sex. And I really think that if we all look at it, you know, gender means sex, sex means gender, and there are many other words if we looked up in the encyclopedia for synonyms that we would find other words that we would want to use. But for this, we chose the word gender.
Representative Grossell.
So I guess your first speaker came up and was talking about equal rights for women.
Mm-hmm.
Women, that is your sex, that is, and my sex is male. I guess I'm just not clear as to why you need to go with gender. If this is an equal rights ERA for equal rights for women, as stated by your first speaker, why not just put sex in there?
Representative. Or it looks like one of your testifiers might have a response for that. Yep, come forward, Dr. Kennedy.
Well, before they do, I guess I'm just confused why you're hung up on a word such as gender and what big of a difference it makes. But, you know, men, you know, this bill, if this amendment goes into our Constitution, men will also benefit from the principle of gender equity. Especially when it comes to men and anybody in Minnesota, because when it comes to their private lives and their roles in families, their role in society, we don't need to define whether you are a male or a female, just as your member said, why should we have to identify in a political way? There's no need to identify. So gender is an all-inclusive, encompassing word that includes everyone in our society.
Representative Grossell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. You know, I look at this, and you know, I look at the abortion issue, and just like is this the conversation that happened today? Well, this is part of it. The abortion issue is part of this conversation as well. People want to distance themselves from it. If this is an LGBTQ issue, then back up. This has also been an LGBTQ issue, is what you're saying? Then, when you're using gender and you're using people identifying other than male or female. So, with that being said, you know, I don't agree with that agenda. Doesn't mean that all people don't have human rights, because we all do. And I've protected those for years. So to have someone bringing legislation forward out of an agenda that is other than how it's presented I don't really agree with that. To have moral issues forced on me or anyone else who do not agree with the verbiage of this, to have the moral issues of abortion. So, you know, words do matter how you put things in statute, because an and or an or in certain places, or a shall or a must in certain places in statute, mean a heck of a lot different. They have a heck of a lot different meaning. And I've dealt with that for years in the courts. I've dealt with that for years in cases. So when you put gender in the bill, it has meaning. It has definition. So this, to me, I'm looking at this, and this is not a bill that is solely approaching equal rights for women, as was stated.
So, Representative, I don't know if you want to respond, or one of your testifiers might want to respond to that. What would you prefer?
I would like to respond first, and then if one of them would like to.
Go ahead.
So I don't even know where to begin with this. The word gender is all-inclusive of everyone. The intention of this bill, if you look at it historically, for over 100 years, women have been asking for this to go into our Constitution in order to be assured of equal pay, equal opportunity, the ability to make their own choices in their own lives without somebody else telling them, yes, no, I'm going to take your paycheck and do what I want with it. I'm going to take your children and do what I want with them. This has nothing to do. This bill has nothing to do with abortion. This has nothing to do with any LGBTQ issues. We all know that you can take any piece of legislation and twist it the way you want it to be. This bill is purely asking for the opportunity to put onto our ballot for the people of Minnesota, not for us to decide, but for the people of Minnesota to decide whether to add the words to provide equality under the law shall not be abridged or denied on account of gender. And that means not just if you identify as a male, or not if you just identify as a female. However you identify yourself, we look at you and you are equal under the law in every opportunity that is available to you. Now, if states have taken this in the past and used it to whatever advantage when it comes to the abortion laws, that's a separate issue. If Minnesota needs to go to legislation around that, you folks are more than free to create your own legislation on that. If you want something on the ballot that says you don't have to identify for a political party, go ahead and do that. That's what you can do as a legislator. But we're not here today. This bill does not address those issues, because all we are asking is for equality under the law for whoever you are. And if you want to take it and spin it any way you can, you sure can. But that's not what this is. We are looking for an amendment to add language for equality under the law, and it's for the people of Minnesota to decide, not for the legislators.
So, sure. Members, I just want to say one thing here. We are not getting into the we're not doing questions as much anymore now, and I want to make sure that we have an opportunity to hear from the audience, because I haven't opened that up to the audience yet. And if you want to have a brief response, you can, but just to remind the members here, I'd like to keep this to questions now. We're getting close on time, and I know several of you still have questions, and I want to make sure that you all have an opportunity to ask those questions, too. So you can briefly respond, Mr. Grossel.
Okay.
A representative.
Either way is fine. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative. You know, I've got concerns from the Minnesota Family Council, MCCL, they are seeing something in here that maybe a lot of other people aren't seeing, but it raises very, very great concerns with these two groups. And so it raises concerns in my mind as well. So with that being said, would you consider changing gender, since we don't have a definition anyplace in statute for it, changing gender to sex? Because that would clean it up. That would make it very clear what this is for.
Representative.
No, I would not.
Okay. Let's go ahead and open it up to the audience. Is there anyone from the audience who wishes to testify? Yeah. Okay, why don't we start? I'm seeing, can you keep your hands up just so we have an idea? Yep, so we have four people. I believe the woman in the necklace here had mentioned that you were interested in testifying before, so why don't you come forward first? And I think I see some other folks, too. I've got you. All right, come on forward, please. Welcome, and please go ahead and introduce yourself to the committee.
Good morning. My name is Kathy Burkett, and actually I'm wondering, I have my own testimony, but I was contacted because there are a couple of others that were not able to come and they forwarded their testimony. May I read that, please?
You can, Ms. Burkett, but I think if you can try to keep it to about 2 minutes, that would be helpful.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Oops. I've got it.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's all right.
I haven't done this before, so thank you.
It's all right. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. My name, again, is Kathy Burkett, and I'm going to read this on behalf of Julie Quist with the Child Protection League. This constitutional amendment is a fraud. It isn't an equal rights amendment. It's a gender spectrum equality amendment. This is the most anti-woman legislation ever seen. This bill is male domination of women at its ultimate worst. Men are now dominating women and girls in women's sports. Girls and women are now forced to shower with men and have their personal privacy violated in bathrooms and locker rooms. Shall not be abridged in law covers the spectrum of 87 genders in marriage, family, school, business, and sports. For the sake of girls and women's rights, vote no. Thank you. And then I also have one from Barb Anderson, and she says, so sorry she couldn't make it down here due to the bad weather and bad roads. So here's her testimony. My name is Barb Anderson with the Child Protection League, and I am testifying in opposition to HF 13. All across the state, an aggressive gender ideology is already confusing children and their families by distorting language and the meaning of gender. Gender has become an elastic term that can mean any kind of identity depending on how you feel at any given time. 2 years ago, Robin McHalen, a gender equality trainer, came to our school district to teach our staff about gender equality. Parents were shocked at what she considered to be gender options. Ms. McHalen gave a fast recitation of the following types of gender choices deserving of equality: straight, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, two-spirit, same-gender, loving, pansexual, flexsexual, not straight, not labeling, straightish, straight so far, straight without obstacles, straight but stuff happens, gender bending, bi-gender, pan-gender, agender or agender, asexual, and other, so many options. This is absolute nonsense. Equality under the law for made-up genders and enshrine this in our Minnesota Constitution, this would give full government legitimacy to the entire racial gender spectrum, or excuse me, radical gender spectrum. Personally, as a woman and a former teacher, I find this to be insulting. This is an attack on common sense and an assault on the minds of our children. Please vote no on the HF 13. Let's see.
And Ms. Burkett, I think you're over 2 minutes. I would like to call on the other members of the audience, and if we have time, we'll come back to you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Okay, so I think someone over here, go ahead and come forward. And if the other people who want to testify, please just come down to the front row so we can save time walking up to the microphone, please. Thank you for coming, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you so much, honorable members of the committee and the chairwoman. I'm speaking in opposition to this amendment, and I did sign up to speak.
Sorry. Okay. Could you
Susan Halverson.
Susan Halverson, did you say? Thank you, Ms. Halverson. Go ahead.
And I'm speaking as a concerned citizen, but more than anything, I hear a lot about men and women right now. I want to talk about gender and children. I'm a former teacher, retired now, teaching in the public schools. I'm also a very active member of the NEA, the National Education Association, which is run by the democratic process. But I'm very, very concerned with this issue of gender. I've been to many workshops over the years. I've been involved in this for 30 years. I am both sides of the issue, and I am very concerned, and I want to tell you why. And I'm speaking for children. This says, Section 18, equality under the law shall not be abridged or denied on account of gender. No one's talking here about science or biological fact. That's completely left out. This is important. We're talking about children here. As we've already heard mentioned, gender is whatever you feel at the present time. No one can change his or her sex. The DNA in every cell in the body is imprinted male or female. And I did bring two documents from the American College of Pediatricians, which will back this up scientifically. I also hear, surgery can't change a person's sex. Yes, you might be given hormone blockers and then given the opposite hormone. Does your own body produce that opposite hormone? No, it doesn't. You have to be injected with it. I also hear, well, I'm a man trapped in a woman's body or vice versa.
Ms. Halverson, it's been over 2 minutes. Can you just quickly wrap it up, please?
I will, but that I think we gave so much time to the in favor, and now we're giving very little time.
We did have opponents that were signed up that couldn't make it today.
I did sign up.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I'm on the list. Okay. Yeah, but I will hurry. It's not real long.
Thank you.
And I hear them say, I'm a man trapped in a woman's body, vice versa. I don't deny that might be totally how they feel. But the proof shows that at 8 weeks gestation, 8 weeks in the womb, our brains are imprinted male or female. That's why we produce testosterone or estrogen. I just want to name some harms from this. Cross-sex hormones over a long period of time will lead to infertility. A lifetime of hormone treatments can also have profound psychological consequences, abnormalities of hormones, vascular complications, potential cancer, and other things. Just to make this a little shorter, I want to tell you, because I'm in the NEA, I'm the chair of a national caucus, and my goal is to get the facts out. Scientific and research-based information to teachers on this topic, homosexuality and gender. This year, at the convention, I had a booth there for 6 days. I invite experts to come. A girl came up to me, a young teacher, and she said, thank you so much for being here. Please, please continue telling the facts about science and the facts about studies. She said, I grew up in California, and I cannot even tell you what I was taught and how it messed me up so much. I didn't know who I was, where I was. And she said, it was hell going through the journey, and I don't wish it on anyone. Please, please, keep telling the facts. I personally know Walt Heyer. He did have sex reassignment surgery at age 42. He tells me that so many people contact him with regrets. And that's my concern, children. Their brains aren't ready. Until you're age 25, you really don't have a brain, and experiences do affect your patterns in your brain. So thank you so much, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ms. Halverson. I did note that you did sign up in advance. Thank you very much. I didn't know that before. Okay, one of our next members from the public, please come forward. Go ahead, and you can talk fast. Please do. 2 minutes. Thank you so much. And introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kelly Herwig. I have 10 years of specialized study in race, class, gender, public and social history discourses and epistemologies from San Diego State University. I'm a resident of Mille Lacs County, Minnesota. In the book, Gender Politics and the State, Vicki Randall and Georgina Whalen highlight the scholar Anne Marie Goetz, clinical professor at the Center for Global Affairs, New York University, and former chief advisor on peace and security at UN Women. Citing Goetz's argument, Randall and Whalen write, quote, that gendered public sector institutional failures cannot be seen simply as a result of discriminatory attitudes or irrational choices on the part of individuals or unintended oversights in policy, nor are they deliberate policy outcomes. They are embedded in the norms, structures, and practices of institutions. Despite the frequent appearance of gender neutrality, it is therefore necessary to understand not simply the nature of the structures, but also the history of social choices made by particular groups embedded in those institutions, end quote. With titles such as Women's Interest and the Post-Structuralist State by Pringle and Watson in the book Destabilizing Theory, Contemporary Feminist Debates, published out of Cambridge, the scholar can see that the notion of gender has been deconstructed in the postmodern milieu of academia, structuring in a legal language too loosely the term gender in its social implications can create a double-edged sword of the law over the state of Minnesota. The language of this proposed Minnesota constitutional amendment fails to even define the term gender, and further examination of our human rights statutes fail to deliver to the researcher a legal definition of the term gender. The troubling ambiguity of the bill's language may deliver further social injustices and perpetrate further historical commitments of systematic sexual discrimination by its failure to define gender from proper experts and scholarship. So until a consensus can be reached of a proper legal definition of gender, vague legal statutes should be avoided. Please, I need more time. A better precedent for civil rights, which I've researched, would be the broadest, most democratic model for our republic. My argument is modeling this state constitutional amendment in the language of the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Do I have time to read that?
No.
Okay. So, a better constitutional amendment for Minnesota based on the framework of the 14th Amendment would reaffirm the securing of rights to all Minnesotans and the blessing of liberty without abridgment to ourselves and our posterity. I humbly propose an improved and amended version of this bill to the committee to debate for our state. It is important to remember that this House is not bestowing rights onto peoples. The rights of the people and our freedoms originate outside of government in the natural law, as it tells us in the Declaration of Independence. Your job is to secure these rights among us. Here's my proposal. I'll end with this. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. Minnesota, the state of Minnesota, shall not make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of Minnesota residents, nor shall the state of Minnesota deprive any person. And we can have a very good debate on when personhood will begin under the law, deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, or deny to any person within Minnesota's jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. That would be a better constitutional amendment than this, as stated. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Herwig. Go ahead, and we are running close on time here. So.
I'll be very short.
Thank you so much. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Brad Leto. I'm the Secretary-Treasurer of the Minnesota AFL-CIO, Federation of 1,000 local union state councils with over 300,000 members. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 13. The Minnesota AFL-CIO does not take lightly placing constitutional amendments on the election ballot. We have opposed many. However, this amendment is too important to ignore. Quite honestly, I'm astounded that in 2019, we are still fighting for constitutional rights, equal rights for all. This debate, as was mentioned, started 100 years ago, but actually, I will talk lesser time. March 1972, Congress placed an amendment to the U.S. Constitution up for states for ratification. From 1972 until next month here, it will have been 47 years since Congress took action. Sadly, I will say the National AFL-CIO and the Minnesota AFL-CIO were late to actively support the National ERA. Once we did support it, we actively did so and are proud to support this effort. Again, this debate has been raging for 47 years plus, but I would just say from 72, but it's actually longer. The truly disappointing fact is that we're still having this debate, a debate about over half the population, and we have no problem with gender or sex, but over half the population having equal rights. The time is now. The wait must be over. This amendment should go forward. The Minnesota AFL-CIO is proud to support House File 13. We respectfully ask you to vote yes to move the bill forward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, and you were under 2 minutes. We appreciate that. Thank you. And members, I think what we're going to do, I know there were a few questions, but I'm going to call on the person who hasn't had a chance yet to ask a question, and that's you, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yep.
Thank you, Representative Kanish Patin. So my question relates to the gender question as well, but in a different way. It's just very practical. The main thing I've heard from many of my constituents who have contacted me on this issue is their concerns about how this will impact girls and women's sports, both in like elementary and high school level and also at the collegiate level. And their concern about the use of the word gender is that it will make it more difficult for women to participate in sports when, Title IX has made great strides in that. So if you could just address how this particular use of gender will affect women in sports, that would be great. Thank you.
Go ahead, Representative.
Well, I think my answer is that we have no idea how that will affect it at this time. The effect and the addition of the ERA in our state will eventually have effects, but it won't be immediate. How school districts or athletics starts to interpret it, that would be up to them. But at this point, this bill is asking for equal rights for all. I just lost my thought. So I'm sorry, I don't know how to reply to that one. Again, I think there are many ways that people will interpret this bill and use it one way or the other. But again, we would hope that folks would use it to be advantageous rather than to keep another person or another group down. So I'm sorry, I don't have an answer for that specifically.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. So I would just want to state on behalf of many of my constituents this grave concern that some have already seen in their schools about, because of concern about gender, that people who are not female by birth are participating on female sports teams, and that's very concerning to them and their ability to participate fully. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, with that, at this time,
Madam Chair, how many people, if I may ask, how many people are left that have questions on your list?
I had a couple. I think maybe you and Lucero did. I mean, I was trying to honor those who hadn't had a chance to ask the question
yet. And I appreciate that. I'm not doing anything tonight. I'm more than glad to come back this evening and talk more about this issue. I think it's a really important one. And I think we need to distinguish this issue of gender versus sex. We haven't heard back from House Research the definition of sex. And I think what we're feeling here is we're getting mixed messages that while the author and the supporters of this want to promote women's rights, what we're doing is conflating this issue by inserting the word gender, which has only been done in one other state, and it's actually is going to have the opposite effect, or could potentially have the opposite effect of what the author really wants the bill to do. by just stating what my colleague to my right just stated, in that someone that identifies as a woman that is a man is going to be okay, you know, they're going to have rights over and above the women that this bill is supposed to protect. So I think this merits more discussion, and I'm more than happy to come back tonight if you would see fit to lay this on the table. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Scott. I'm not going to do that. Some of us do have committee hearings already scheduled for tonight as well, and I think at this point people have had a chance to express their concerns about this. This is the third stop that it's been through. My understanding it's going to end up on the House floor as well, so there will be another opportunity for debate at that point. So at this point, I am going to move House File 13.
Madam Chair?
At this point,
I have more questions as a result of the testimony and new statements that were made, new questions that I didn't think of the first time.
Chair Mariani.
Madam Chair, were you in the middle of making a motion? Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, I think it's appropriate to allow the maker of a motion to continue making their motion without interruption. And then I want to modify your motion, so I'd like to amend your motion because I think I know what your motion is going to be.
All right, I'm going to continue with my motion. At this point, I move House File 13 be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
Madam Chair, I would like to amend your motion. And I'd like to it's not an amendment of the motion. Madam Chair, I would ask for a roll call vote on this.
All right, Chair Mariani has asked for a roll call, and at this time, the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Mueller?
Aye.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Barr?
No.
Representative Cantrell?
Yes.
Representative Carlson?
Yes.
Representative Considine?
Yes.
Representative Grossel?
No.
Representative Hassan? Representative Herr?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Liebling? Representative Lucero?
No.
Representative Mariani?
Yes.
Representative Noor?
Yes.
Representative O'Neill?
No.
Representative Robbins?
No.
Representative Zhang?
Yes.
Okay. There being 8 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 13 is recommended to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. With that, members, we are going to stand in adjournment. We'll be meeting again tomorrow to hear one bill. Thank you. Meeting is adjourned.